The gates to the Rose Garden are now open. Welcome to my world. You are listening to Talk That Talk with Danielle Moneyham, a reflective conversation where I share the lessons I've learned on this journey called life. I don't have all the answers, but I do have plenty of questions. My name is Danielle Moneyham, and this is my love letter to the world, where I let my soul speak. Let's talk.
Erin, I have three favorite colors: navy blue, Kelly green, and gray.
That nigga don't get no name?
I mean, you know, it's so many. Like, I don't really like heather. Charcoal gray. How about that?
I mean, because I want to give gray love, too. I feel like we don't need to do a sound check. We can just go straight into it. Hey, Erin.
Hi, Danielle.
The gates to the Rose Garden are open. I have not recorded a podcast for Talk That Talk with Danielle Moneyham in like a month because I've been so busy on Black Educators Matter. So it feels good to be able to be back in the Rose Garden talking.
Shout out to you and shout out to Black Educators Matter.
Thank you, Erin. Shout out to you, the anti-bride, coming back. Because the last time we spoke, it was January.
That was before COVID.
My God.
Crushed everyone's dreams.
We was talking about some, because I don't want to have to deal with the seating arrangement. Bitch, you're not going outside.
Yeah, you don't have to deal with anything.
Just feel. You're talking about. So, how have things been for you as a bride going through these last, it's June, so 6 months of 2020.
It's been great for me because I don't have to do anything. I'm a postponed bride.
Is that what we're calling it, postponed bride?
So I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I'm a paused bride.
A paused bride.
Yeah, so I'm fine with it. I haven't had to have any more conversations. I've not had to field phone calls from godmothers and aunts and people wanting to back me into a corner to have unnecessary conversations. So it's great for me. I was quarantining before quarantining was a thing.
I was social distancing before y'all knew what to call it.
Filtering in place.
Okay. I've been waiting on a reason to wear a superhero mask outside. No, I haven't.
If you need a reason.
No, because I wear glasses. So the mask has given me the fog. It's not. And now it's hot outside. Yesterday, I had it on. So it was fog and a little bit of sweat forming on my brow.
Absolutely. And you get suffocated by your own breath.
You got to have really hard conversations with yourself internally, though, because you can't deal with all of the hot breath under the mask.
It's a lot, mm-hmm.
Thinking a lot of thoughts in 2020. But we had some stellar entertainment to get us through. We had The Last Dance.
Yes.
How did you feel watching The Last Dance?
So it was just nostalgic for me because I remember being too young to participate in anything that was happening, but I remember it happening around me. And I still remember like the sense of excitement that was palpable in the city. So like everywhere you went. So it was a trip down memory lane, and it just made me realize like, damn, I'm old or I'm getting up there. But also just like, it's so different now. Like the way that the energy of the city then is very different than the energy now. So, but I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too. I enjoyed it because like you said, super nostalgic. So I remember being in my grandma's kitchen on the west side of Chicago because my father was a west side man. So I remember being in my grandma Bernice's kitchen with the lights off watching the Bulls intro.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that intro is everything.
It was really like, it's nothing like it. I remember when the Bulls, I don't remember which championship it was, but because I was so young, my sister and brothers got to go out and ride around. I had to stay in the yard. And I remember being outside in the yard with my mother. And everybody was just riding down the street, horns honking, people yelling out the cars, hanging out the cars. Like, it just, we couldn't even have that now if we wanted to, because it probably would erupt in violence. It's so sad. But that's another story, and I'm no storyteller. So
we had The Last Dance, and we also just finished up with Insecure.
I was so sad that it ended. I just needed like a few more episodes, especially after that long hiatus. But it took a turn. It was like real life this season.
So this season was like real life?
Yeah, because like usually if you go back, the earlier seasons were funny. You know, she's that quirky black girl, but she's relatable, you know. So, but, and it just kind of, you could laugh at her journey. But this season, shit got, it hit home because it was kind of like growing pains. So it wasn't as many laughs, but that doesn't mean that it still wasn't entertaining. It was just real relatable.
And I think that I thought this season was the manifestation of all of the little seeds we had been seeing the first few seasons.
Absolutely. You definitely saw the growth in every character. Even the character development, like the way that they laid it out for everyone to be able to tell their individual story. I don't know. Their writers are amazing.
They do have some really, really, really good writers, and they are very, they use so many elements to tell the story. So in addition to just a really relatable story, really funny characters, and even memorable side characters, like her gang member, neighbor.
That's brazy.
It is brazy.
Okay, your ABB, or I'm sorry, your baby bees, okay? I don't know, but this season, what I did notice is, to me, they used a lot more, they incorporated a lot more cultural components to me, like the music, the scenery.
Yep.
They really wanted to showcase the city and their, like, experience in the city. So I thought that was dope.
Yeah, the videography was really nice this season. They, wardrobe was a bit much.
So it wasn't just me.
No.
Like, everybody got a glow up. I don't know if they did that because they took such a hiatus that they wanted to give us something visually. But everybody, Molly walking around in $20,000 outfits. And I'm just thinking to myself, even Issa, like, don't get me wrong, you're doing your thing with, you know, becoming a cultural curator. But a cultural curator getting off the ground is not affording $500 and $600 tops. So it was just, they tried to take it next level. And that was another, to me, illustration of the evolution of the show and them as characters. Like, they really wanted you to know we've grown up since the last time you seen us.
Well, if they wanted you to know that they grew up, that's why they was giving us so much meat smacking this whole episode. We saw everybody's ass. We saw everybody's ass except Kelly. Hashtag we want to see some damn Kelly action. We saw everybody's ass.
Outside of the norm. And it's always been a very, like...
No. Issa with her TSA agent. Lawrence. I know we seen Lawrence and Issa all back on the couch again. We saw Molly. Molly, but first you got to eat this ass. What's her last name? Whatever her last name is.
Of it now, just because you asked.
Thank you. Like, we, even Tiffany, last episode, we got a little towel action. We saw body.
That wasn't new to me. Like,
no, life came at you fast in previous seasons. Issa got the little eyeball action, but no way did we see. Maybe I need to go back.
The Ferris wheel episode.
Which episode?
The Ferris wheel episode from last season where they got it in unprotected. On the Ferris wheel, Issa stayed riding on some soul pole, honey. She loves to climb on top.
She can climb the tree, but what I'm saying is, when have we seen that? I thought I was watching real sex. I said, what time is it, HBO?
Or when Lawrence was messing with the little chick from the bank.
That's the only time. That's the only time we saw that man putting in work. Don't get me started on Lawrence. That's the only time we saw him putting in work was when he was freaking the banker who had a real life baby by Dre.
I saw that.
Like what?
Well, I don't know. The sex scenes, that didn't stand out to me as anything atypical as much as, like you said, the visual imagery. That to me was more present. So, or something new to show the growth. But also the way that they really like depicted Issa and Molly's friendship, that made it real. Like, it wasn't as lighthearted this season. And that's why I feel like it should have been longer. Like, they could have gave us 2 more episodes. They could have took us through the end of June.
Let's talk about the evolution of Issa and Molly's relationship. So, was it an evolution?
I think more so individually. Like, we always knew they were BFFs, they were bottom bitches, it was them too, but I think they showed the evolution of them as individuals more so than necessarily the relationship, which ironically, their evolution as individuals to me contributed to their friendship going on a downward spiral. Like, it was a bit, once Issa to me established her independence professionally, even not being in a relationship, just that to me was a slippery slope into the downfall of their friendship. Because when you get into roles, and I play a role in this relationship, you play a role in this relationship, that is not just for gender. That applies to friendships as well. And to have a balance in that friendship, you kind of have to stay where you are. Even if you look at how they, like in rom-coms and TV shows, how they always have the main character and then they always have the sidekick best friend. And the sidekick best friend is usually chubby or less attractive or slapstick or, you know, just something to support that main character. But what's interesting to me, even in talking about it like now, because I didn't realize it, for Issa to be the main character, somehow she was in that role of being Molly's support as opposed to it being the other way around.
Because Molly, it seems like Molly viewed Issa in Issa's role, which was less than Molly's. Like, Molly was the lawyer who made a lot of money. Issa worked, and we got y'all with a super poor, like, Issa was the brokest and probably had the longest relationship outside of Tiffany. But, like, Issa had a long-term relationship, but she was in, like, dead-end everything. But she had a job, she had a relationship, she had a this, she had a that, but it was dead-end. But when she stepped outside of that dead-endness and went down, Molly was still fine. Remember, Issa was in a car accident, so couldn't drive her little Lyft anymore, sleeping on Daniel's couch. Molly was still cool. In fact, Molly was making her feel even better. Inviting her over and they was having their little pajama parties with their little silk robes and stuff. But now when Issa actually recognizes the power that she has and steps out in her power and starts making things happening on her own, including expanding her network, Molly feels threatened. And because Molly felt threatened, or like Issa has Condola now because of that meeting, it was like Molly felt like she didn't even have to try with Issa anymore. And if Issa didn't get it the first time, Molly was, instead of texting to clarify or explain herself, she would just be okay, and doing a little passive aggressive stuff like taking the parking spot and holding
that parking spot incident. That was just the perfect depiction of their friendship, the give and take. Molly stood her ground, whether she was right, wrong, whatever, and Issa conceded. And she didn't want to concede in that moment. And that's when you kind of saw the shift, because it just, like, it was very symbolic of their friendship Molly always had her shit together. She was content with being in that role. Issa was content with being, you know, in that noble kind of lackluster fall behind. I mean, because think about it. We never got to see her relationship with Lawrence when they were in school or when he was working. It started out right when he was in that unemployed space. So Molly just liked the glory.
Molly liked the glory.
There was not enough room to share for her. She did not want to share the spotlight. Which is interesting to me with Issa being the main character, the protagonist, whatever you want to call her. So for her to be in that role, that's interesting, the way that they did it.
But, yeah.
Yeah, Molly, I know some Mollies. And so,
okay, so what is Molly? What? Okay, Molly.
Molly is self-serving. She is a glory hog. She likes to be the center of everyone else's world. It needs to, everything needs to kind of revolve around Molly's needs. And when it doesn't, she doesn't handle that well. Even her relationship. Yes, she really wanted this relationship to work. What was his name, Andrew?
Yeah.
Yes, she wanted this relationship to work and she was really willing to work hard, but she couldn't even maintain both. She was unable to say, I can maintain this friendship with Issa and maintain putting in work in a relationship. But Issa did it for years. Like, it all revolved around Molly's needs, Molly's wants, and when it didn't work out for her, she didn't know how to be flexible or didn't even want to be flexible to take a look at herself. Even when she was attempting to reflect by going to therapy and things like that, she still didn't want to hear it. It's a mental block for her. Nobody is about to fight you to take down these walls that you built up brick by brick, Molly. I'm just not going to do it. Nobody has that much energy when they need to be devoted to themselves.
But it's interesting, like, Molly is a lot of things. And I think because we understand Issa, like, the show gives us a glimpse into Issa's mindset. We see her rapping in the mirror, what she wants to do versus what she does do. But with Molly, like, okay, she is intelligent. She's clearly ambitious. She's clearly beautiful and cares about her health and her appearance. She cares very deeply for the people that she loves. She got a two-parent household and siblings. So she's not like an only child.
She appears to be the most successful sibling. So, I mean, she's used to that role.
And she holds real grudges because, so, okay, is Molly wrong? Let me start there. You know, I will always be like, but is it wrong? Is Molly wrong? Is Molly wrong? So we can pick which one because there are a lot of questions. With Molly's approach to her relationship with Issa, was Molly wrong for no longer wanting to put in the effort to bring Issa to where she needed Issa's friendship to be? Was she wrong for not being willing to put in that work and explain to Issa what type of friend she needed Issa to be?
I'm not going to say she was wrong, because she's entitled to her feelings as well. However, in the moment, she knew that Issa was growing. She was on a different path. And in that moment, Molly made the choice not to support Issa the way she needed to be supported. Issa always supported Molly that way. Molly supported Issa the way she wanted to support her, not the way Issa may have needed, if that makes sense.
So are you talking about specifically with the block party?
I'm talking about with the entire friendship in the stage that it was in. With Issa, like I said, we can clearly see her growth with her taking on these new professional endeavors, with her trying to get her shit together, pretty much. I don't know that in that moment Molly was ready to say, okay, I see my friend is doing all this, this, and this. How can I support her the way she needs it? And that's what I mean by it was a choice. So I'm not going to say it was wrong, but she chose at some point to say, yeah, I just really don't want to be there for her. Yeah, I just really don't want to do this for her. Yeah, I just really don't want to be that person for her. Even when Issa called her and asked her if she could have Andrew kind of put in a good word, she totally, in my opinion, blew that out of proportion, but used that as a scapegoat to finally say, yeah, I just don't want to do it. So she wasn't saying, I don't want to do this for you because I'm tired of helping you. She was saying, yeah, I just don't want to be this person for you at all anymore. Because to me, it was nothing to say, hey, can you just send an email? Because Molly, you were good with always being in that role of bailing Issa out. So what was the difference with this? Did she not feel needed? When people don't feel needed anymore, that really strikes a chord with them.
So was Issa a good friend to Molly? So thinking about it from Molly's perspective and everything that Molly went through this year, was Issa a good friend to Molly?
I cannot answer that question without really reflecting on it. But what I can say is Issa was a consistent friend to Molly. So I don't know if that defines good or bad, but Issa, in her approach, she never wavered. Even in past seasons, Issa would call Molly out on her shit. The difference is Molly was willing to receive it from Issa because she felt like, oh, this is the closest person to me. Even if she didn't like it, she heard her. Now, somewhere along with this shift, Molly was no longer receptive to Issa's consistency. I don't know if it did not serve her anymore, if it didn't support her, if she was scared that Issa may be, you know, not even surpassing her, but getting to her level professionally. Like, I don't know what it is, but all of a sudden, Molly now had a problem with the type of friend Issa always was thirsty because she never changed.
I agree 1,000,000%. Issa has always been Issa. And yeah. It was like, whether you appreciated Issa or not, she did not change in her friendship with Molly. Molly changed. Like, absolutely. Instead of Molly communicating to Issa what was happening, Molly would on purpose censor herself to not try. She, like, there were multiple times, I'm specifically thinking about when they were hiking, because that was like the beginning of the end, when they were still hiking together, and Issa made a comment about the relationship that, mm-hmm. that Molly was trying to bring up. Issa was just talking and hiking. Molly took that, received it, and held on to it, just like she did Broken Pussy.
Facts. I have to wonder if, like, I understand that this relationship was important to Molly, even though Molly acted like she did not want to put in any work with this man from jump. She didn't want Andrew until he showed her he didn't have to be bothered with her shit. He didn't have to deal with her until she felt super lonely, whatever. Okay, fine. Molly has always felt like she was too good for everyone that has tried to date her. So I have to wonder if this is a vulnerability for her, which was new, which is valid, that, okay, I'm giving this a shot and it's so new to me and it feels so different that I'm uncomfortable sharing that side of things with anyone, so I'm going to just figure it out on my own. That's valid. I could totally understand that. And you're not going to be quick to articulate your feelings when you're still trying to figure them out. However, because she went into this place of solitude about brooding over her new feelings and how to deal with all of these things that were new for her, Issa is not a mind reader. So I'm going to just keep going on business as usual, like I'm thinking our friendship is. And Molly, to me, wanted Issa to figure it out. Yeah. Molly wanted Issa to come to her and say, hey, what's going on? I see she wanted her to coddle her. And that's the thing about it. With Molly being this completely, like, professional, ambitious, successful person, somewhere in her, she still wants people to coddle her and really, like, be concerned about her feelings. You can't be aggressive as fuck and emotional as fuck. Like, you just can't. Aggression is the emotion that you chose. So you can't be sensitive and aggressive. And I know so many people like that, namely a friendship that I had where it's just like you come off so hard, but you're really very sensitive and I'm just supposed to understand. No, no, that's not how this works.
See, let's talk about that. Because people say that that's me. They say that I come off as
really
yes, that I come off as super aggressive and all of this. But I know that I am very sensitive. I just play a thug on TV, but I don't even play the thug. This happened to me. So what does it mean, like, for her to be aggressive and emotional? It's so fascinating because as we grow older, we still have these very childlike interactions with our feelings and our emotions and how we feel when people that we love or trust, quote, hurt, end quote, us. And part of being in a relationship is that people you love and trust will hurt you intentionally and unintentionally. Like, accidents happen. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. If you are in a relationship with people, you gonna get your feelings hurt. It's just,
that's the risk.
That is the risk and the cost of being in a relationship. And the harder you love, the more you are opening yourself up to experience more hurt. That is the trade-off.
But I think we only tend to apply that to romantic relationships, and it holds very true in platonic friendships as well. And it hurts more in a platonic friendship because you don't expect it to end in heartbreak, devastation, betrayal, like all of these very strong words that you think only apply to a romantic relationship.
Harlequin romance novels. When you were saying that, I just saw the back covers. Like betrayal, heartache, like yes, those.
But those make for some of the best stories.
Because that's not supposed to happen with your friends. That's not what is supposed to happen with your friends. Especially hashtag no new friends. Not your day one friends. Not your best friends.
The day ones are the most susceptible to it, in my opinion, because your day ones, these are the ones that you grew up with. You all were kids together. You have evolved together, but that doesn't mean that you evolved in the same way. And that's when it becomes painful. It becomes very painful to try to continue to hold on to something just because it's routine or it's consistent or it's what you do know. It's your comfort and your support. But things that you're interested with, like someone who you're 7, 8, 13, 14, like those interests that you shared then, I would venture to say that you are not interested in the same things that you were at 7, 8, 13, 14, 16, 17, 20, 21 as you are now. That's the same thing with the friendship. Just because we shared those commonalities or those experiences then, it takes a lot to accept someone for who they are, where they are, especially when you start to see that they are growing in a different way from you. And if you ever notice, like, I have friends that will tease me about certain things, or I should say I had friends because I protect my friendship circle and my friendship peace now.
Boo!
But I had friends that would tease me, like, girl, you interested in this? Why are you interested in that? You cook like a white person. You this, you that. Why do you want to do this? Don't nobody want. And it would just be like, so what if I prefer to read a book or go here? I had a friend ask me, what did I have against nature? Because I did not want to, just because I didn't want to fucking work out outside, I wanted to go to the gym. Well, bitch, what you got against nature? Why did I have something against nature? Because I just don't want to exercise outside. That's how petty it becomes. And it wasn't just joking. It was said with so much like vitriol behind it. Like, what the fuck you got against nature? It's like, excuse me.
When the jokes stop being jokey.
Yes.
You're not joking with me, ma'am. You're angry and you've been waiting on an opportunity to lash out at me.
So now you got a problem with me and you going to use the lake as, you know, like, come on. So it's just crazy to me how we never think about that, the evolution of a friendship. We just expect it. We take it for granted. I mean, rightfully so, it's not a bad thing, but we just expect those people to be there. My interests could be very different from yours. What if I'm corporate and you're creative? What if I, you know, for me, I might want to travel internationally. You might be a road trip home. Like, I don't know. And then that's when you start to kind of venture out. You meet people at work. You you find commonalities with people at work, or you might have a hobby, so then you develop a friend here. Then the jealousy piece starts in. Oh, so you hanging out with her again? Oh, so let me guess, you going out with Betty, your BFF, girl, like, but you don't like underwater basket weaving. And Betty and I have that in common. So why are you mad? So then the jealousy starts to set in. And it just, friendships, particularly female friendships, are so complex that when it gets to the point where it's just like, when you really sit down and be like, damn, I don't have anything in common with her anymore.
No.
So now what do you do? Here comes a friendship breakup. And it becomes very painful and very hard, even to the point where, back to Insecure, when Ethan and Molly, they tried, they had that little fake brunch and they were putting on airs and being all
See, people.
Buddy. I believe that Ethan was genuine.
Yes.
She was making a genuine effort.
Yes.
And so I feel her. But Molly to be, first of all, that pompous and that fucking arrogant to send that text and you're not even paying attention to who you're texting. See, I'm trying with her. Bitch. Fuck you. Damn your try. Like, oh, let me go ahead and get up out of here because I was being genuine. And it's instead of you opening up and using the brunch as a chance to tell me how you really feel and air whatever your issues, grievances, problems are, you phony kicked it, and now here we are.
And that's the sad part. Just like many breakups in real life, the friendship breakup, the pattern is, first is the separation, then it's the breakup. Like, we may not have this blow up exchange where we finally say what it is that we need to say, but the separation, if I am to quote from I Think I Love My Wife, I hear ice cracking, like I think I love my friend. If you find yourself asking yourself those questions where you feel it, I don't know how to describe
it. You don't even want to be bothered. It's not worth your effort. It's not worth your effort or your energy. The same person that could call you any time of the day and night, probably the last person you talk to, chit-chat with, text with before you go to bed, or DM with, the first person that you probably talk to when you wake up. Like, this is a person, if you think about the level of intimacy in these friendships, it's very similar to a romantic relationship. This is a person who has 100% access to you at all times. You could be in the middle of a date. Hell, you could be in the middle of sex. And because your girl knows that you out fucking this nigga, if she's calling or texting you in that moment, you will stop to be like, oh, no, you know, she called back to back. She doesn't do that. Or I got, you know, she sent the code. It must be an issue. And you will tend to that person even over your man sometimes or whoever it is. So for it to start to chip away and that ice to begin to crack and break and shatter and do all of those things in the friendship, it's really hard. And we keep holding on to it. So we play that little role, like how her and Molly would be around each other, but now all of a sudden they're not so inclined to be with each other because you don't want to acknowledge the fact that, hey, we've grown apart. It's no healthy breakups in friendships, in my mind. Like, I can think of I have at least two or three experiences with friendship breakups. And it got to the point that by that third one, it was just like, okay, whatever. Like,
let's talk about that. Because I think we saw it on Insecure. Like, we all saw it, but then we know how it ends, which is different than the breakup.
It's very different because that opportunity to have that kumbaya, hey, let's sit and talk because I miss my friend because you go through that too, it doesn't really come. You're too stubborn. Depending on where it's gone, it's kind of like, oh, well.
It only happened as perfectly and as serendipitously as it did because they both had their hearts broken concurrently.
Right. And they and when does that happen? Right. I mean, let's be honest. So, yeah, it's not that tied up into a perfect little bow. And I hope next season, honestly, that they realistically depict that, yeah, we tried the friendship thing again and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
Because for me, the friendship breakup was so ugly that it took months. We couldn't even get back on the same page. When I would try to make an effort, she wasn't interested. So by the time she got around to making an effort, because I tried to make the effort first, I was a fuck up. Nope, you can't come back here if you wanted to or tried. Like, so I blocked every happy birthday text, every, oh, can we get together? Because I tried for months to write whatever you thought the wrong was. And you wouldn't even give me an opportunity to, which is how I knew you just wanted to out. So take it. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a friendship. I've had several friendship breakups. It's all interesting. Like, nobody has ever told me why. Like, and it's, I don't even know that anybody owes me an explanation. But like in high school, I had, it was a group of us that were best friends. One of us broke, well, she stopped being our friend. So I guess she stopped being my friend because she started dating my boyfriend. So it was like, girl, you really not my friend no more. Okay, I found that out. I was like, how? How, Sway? Then, and as, so that was young adult. That was like 22, 23. Now, about 10 years later, friends that I thought would be around forever, and you feel that weird contention, and it's like, where did this come from? Where did this come from? But at the time, I don't think I had the language to say, I feel something strange happening. Where is this coming from? I just kept trying to think that it would right itself, because that's what friendships do. They fix themselves. Except they got to the point where for one person, we actually did have an exchange, and it was like, what the fuck? And I remember the last messages that we sent to each other, I started off with, I love you. I'm not sure, blah, blah, blah. But I know I started off with that. And she started telling me things that she felt that I had done wrong or bad.
With that's the piece right there, not to cut you off.
Yeah.
They will give you a laundry list of shit that they feel ways that you have wronged them. And it's just like, then they don't want to believe that you're totally fucking clueless to all of this. Like, I really had no idea that you felt this way about this. Like, yes. What do you mean?
Yes.
Where is this even coming from?
And that's where it's like the Molly stopped trying. Like, you need to figure it out, or you need to be like, listen, ma'am, if I've been the same friend that I have been all these years, and you've either been keeping track of things, or lately something has changed and it makes you feel some kind of way when I'm being me, you got to communicate that. Like, you have to say that with your mouth, with your words, not just think that I'm going to figure it out. Or what will happen is exactly what happened. The friendship's ended. But I do think that there is a way that people can grow and grow separately and be fine. Like, I think there is a way that you can bless and release a person. I think it's like, I feel like it doesn't have to go either friend or enemy. But motherfuckers be trying to make you their enemy.
But they do. And I think it really focuses on the energy that you can give the situation. So like, it can be very traumatizing to lose someone that you feel like you were that close to.
Mm-hmm.
But I have had it happen in two different ways. I had it happen in an incredibly toxic, traumatizing way, where a friendship of at least 15 years just like went out in flames of fucking glory. Like, it was epic when I look back on it now.
Yeah.
And then I've also had a friendship that wasn't as long, maybe about 5 or 6 years. So maybe I wasn't as invested in that one. That just kind of went away quietly.
Yeah.
And I never felt the need to have a conversation or figure out why or what happened with this one. I just accepted the fact that she was on a different path, and clearly the path that I'm on no longer aligned or ascribed to what her needs were. So it just ended. And we never had a conversation about it. I don't think it's any bad blood. If I saw her, I would still speak. Hey, how you doing? But it just went away quietly. The traumatic ones are the ones that, to me, stick with you more. And in this day and age of reality TV and all of these friendship circles, Real Housewives of this, Doctor's Wives of that, all these, they glamorize friendships, particularly, I'm going to say, minority friendships, black women friendships, female friendships, because that's what I watch. But I also watch Real Housewives, New York Housewives, whatever. So whatever. But they glamorize these women friendship circles, and they also glamorize the drama because that's what sells. But that drama is real, and it really happens in real life. And how do you come back from that? How do you heal from that? Just like you can be traumatized from a breakup, a romantic breakup, and it makes you, you know, fuck these dudes, and I'm not ever going to stand for this again. And the same thing happens in a friendship. I don't have time for chicks. I don't have time for this. I don't have time for that. Women always want to use that very, like, I don't know how to describe it, but that one word that just is the root of all evil in friendship. Jealous. Oh, she was jealous of me. Oh, she... But no, ma'am. I'm not, because don't forget, I know where the skeletons are buried. I know where all the bodies are. So how can I be jealous of this situation when I know everything that led up to it? But people like to use that word, jealous. Apparently, I was jealous of my friend because she was getting married and I wasn't married yet. I wasn't even in my relationship didn't work out. To this day, crickets on that.
I think
she used to get mad because people would say to her, we always thought Aaron would be the one to get married first because I was the one always in long-term relationships. So there's no jealousy here, but if you would have had a conversation with me about that and asked, are you jealous? I'd have said, bitch, please. But at least it would have been all put out on the table and we could have moved forward. But people don't want to have those hard conversations. And that's why I say sometimes when people see an out, they take it. Molly saw an out. She took it.
Yeah, I think that the feedback for me was, well, again, I never really got no feedback. But probably something about my mouth being smart. I'm going to just go ahead and make a blanket statement and say that was the reason. Because I don't know. But I probably said some shit that made somebody. Hello, somebody. Because then, hello, same OG.
So why is it a problem now?
Which, again, is like, if you've been keeping this list, or if somehow today I am triggering you by me being a consistent friend that I've been. Because that's what I appreciate, the consistency. Yeah. I appreciate the consistency of a person. Because when a person shows you who they are, you believe them.
Absolutely. I am not the friend that will help you move. That is not me. I am consistent in that way. I am a great friend. I will talk with you. We can hang out. We can do, like, there are so many other qualities and characteristics of me as a friend, but I'm not the friend that you call to say, hey girl, can you come help me pack, unpack, move? I don't like to move my own shit. So I'm not going front, like, I'm going to be there for you on that. I'll help you look for a mover. If you don't have the funds and I got it, I'll help you pay for a mover. But, and I'm not trying to minimize or trivialize it, but I'm just saying, to your point about consistency, if you can accept people for who they are, where they are, you know the type of friend that they can be to you. So don't expect me to start doing things out of my character just to support you because that's what you need. No.
Especially if, like, there are times, so talking about, like, coming out of character. So, Tiffany. Shout out to that storyline and us being able to see an example of mental health throughout this whole season, even last season with Nathan. But that postpartum depression and her friends having to come together to support her and her husband and her family through that moment.
Yeah.
Because there are times where you got to come outside of some stuff that you would normally do. That's when it's like superpower activate. We got to go save our friend.
Absolutely. But me helping, right, exactly.
Like, so you can't get mad at me for saying no to you and having boundaries on something that it's like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. And it doesn't mean that I won't be there to help you in the future.
It doesn't mean I don't care about nature.
I love the light.
Nature. But that's the point. In these very close, intimate relationships, it is very hard to set and establish those boundaries. So just imagine if anything goes from 13, 14 years and up, at what point do you revisit a friendship and say, hey, we need to establish some grown woman boundaries at this point? It's just like a friend that was totally pissed with me because I stopped giving her intimate details about my relationships.
You know, that is so interesting.
I realized that I don't have to share the ins and outs of everything that's happening. I got to hold some stuff to myself. And my relationship, as much as you may know, as cool as you may be with whomever I'm dating, I'm not going to give you a play-by-play on the shit that happens in my relationship. I'm just not. That's for me and that individual. That's not for me.
I think I was 25 when I realized that. I specifically remember saying I was going to write an article called Giving You the Keys to Your Vagina Back. Because I remember talking to one of my friends and them saying something about who they was messing with. And I remember being puzzled. And then fast forward, somebody I mentioned to a friend, like somebody that I'm talking to, and they reacted in like such surprise. Like, I didn't know something. And I was like, I didn't send out the newsletter this month. Because it's like,
hello?
Why would you think that you have that much access? But however, if you grew up and it's your day one, and I know, because I know who you was fingering in the back, and I know who you was, and I know who, and it's like, yeah, but you don't have to know that anymore, and I'm not a bad person for not sharing that with you anymore.
But you will be made out to be the bad person because you did not.
And
that's where those boundaries come from. Some women, and I'm saying women because that's just what my experience has been with. Some women, it's too much pressure to maintain a friendship.
It's work. It's
a lot of work. I got to make sure I do this. Oh, you know how she is, so I can't do this. I mean, I had a friend that was, and to this day, I love her dearly, but is she someone that I maintain that friendship with anymore? Not at all. It was exhausting. It was too much pressure. Everything had to be her way all the time. And if she didn't understand why you didn't want to act in accordance with what she wanted, she would cuss you out. Okay, I'm not about to be too many more ancient ass bitches just because I'm not doing what it is that you want me to do. To the point where, like I said, the man that I dated, she wanted all of the details, ins and outs. I had a very personal experience happen to me that she made about her. Oh, I would have really wanted to be there for you. Why didn't you tell me? I could have been there. Because in the moment, it was not about you. I had a miscarriage, and she made my miscarriage about our friendship. How do you do that? And don't get me wrong, I understand that as my friend, you support me and you would have wanted to offer that encouragement and support. But if that's not the space that I was in, I need you to respect that. Not make it about you and get mad at me because I didn't share things with you when they happened in real time. No. So that's when friendships become a lot of pressure and a lot of work. That's another reason why they deteriorate. Dissolve, just go your separate ways. Like, as you get older, you realize your time and your energy is very precious, and who you share it with is very precious. So, no, I don't have time for all that. And looking back, my 15-year friendship that ended, I think where I am in life right now, my life would not have been able to support that friendship anyway. So it was supposed to end, no matter how hurtful it was, no matter how nasty, how many rumors this person spread, to the point where we were in a friendship circle and she got to everybody before she came to me to make them pick sides. And it was just, so that's where either you with me or you against me came from, like Aaron team of one. I'm cool with that because I don't need that stress.
And with all of that, it doesn't mean that all of your friendships, it doesn't mean that all of your friendships will feel good. And it doesn't mean that just because a friendship feels good, it's a good friendship.
Absolutely.
So it's like understanding the nuance with all of this. Like, it's my best friend, my mama and my husband are all born in October. And let me tell you, sometimes I wonder, do they like me? The way that...
Libras or just October?
Libras and Scorpio. So my best friend is a Scorpio. My mom and my husband are Libras. And I just wonder, like, y'all picked me. Why are you talking to me this way? But it's because every friendship is not supposed to come and make you feel good. They got to tell you what you need to hear. Like, if you messing up, they going to tell you. If it's something that you need to see,
receive it from them.
You have to be willing to receive it. So you got to trust the source. So that's the one part. And then on the flip side, just because a friendship feels good doesn't mean it's a good friendship. Because I've had friendships where I really enjoyed being around these people because we could be petty all day. Oh, we could do whatever. And it's like, yeah, that's not necessary. Gossip, I don't want gossip to be used as a bonding tool.
And if that's all you have with that person.
If that's it?
Yeah. Like, you have friends that you can do ratchet hoe shit with. And it's fun if that's the stage that you're in your life. I can think of a chick right now. Me and her were super cool because we were outside. We liked to be, you know, we went to every club. We went to every party. We would be just outside living life, enjoying life, but I couldn't tell you where she's at in life now because to me, that's a natural progression of a friendship that was supposed to end. Reason, season, lifetime type of situation. It's the lifetime or the friendships that we hope are the lifetime ones that when we get those misconstrued and misinterpreted, it can be very painful. I can't be outside doing ratchet hoe shit anymore. That's not the space that I'm in life. She might still be doing this. She might not. Who knows? But that's just not where I am. But I'm okay with that. But my day one that I thought I was your bridesmaid, you would be my, or I was your maid of honor, you would be my maid of honor, you're going to be my child's godchildren or godmother. You know, like, when that person leaves, it really is just like, damn, what really happened? And you know, it took me a long time to get over that. Like, I really had to process that friendship, the ending of that friendship, like a breakup. And there's typically always somebody else involved feeding that person, you know, just looking for, like, in my mind, her other friend was just waiting on her moment. She was always very envious of our closeness. And she, much like yourself, was the type of person that was so, you're so bossy, you're so aggressive. And she never showed that sensitive side. So it was so funny to me when she would be like, you're the only person that knows how sensitive I really am. Well, girl, I've known you since you were 12. You've always been this way. This new person is the person that I think is hilarious. And so people used to feel like, oh, Erin does anything that, you know, her friend, this girl wants her to do, her best friend, they best friends. You know, when you find one, you find the other. And it was interesting to me when I heard her say to someone, I wish I could get Erin to do whatever I wanted her to do. Because no one really knew the dynamics. And when I realized that that was the issue, that now all of a sudden I have my own agenda, I have my own life, I have my own interests, and it's no longer serving her in that capacity, that blew my mind.
That's why it is so important to understand and connect with the people who see you and see your light. And for the people who don't, or the people that don't want to, or the people who want to see you the way that they want to see you, they have the right to do that, but they don't have the right to be in your life and in your space no more.
Yeah, you don't have to have access to me just because this is how you want to see things. Even when she got married, and I know I'm on a tangent, but it's all these things are popping into my head. You know, I was there for her. I opened a credit card to pay for her bridal shower. I made sure, like, I dealt with all the planning, dealing with her crazy-ass mama, who I don't care about respecting my fucking elders. If I ever see her ass on the street, I'm going to cuss her the fuck out. I'm going to end up on the news for pushing an elderly woman.
You better leave that old-ass woman alone.
Man, but it was just like I navigated all the bullshit because I wanted it to be about her. She's getting married. This is her day. But And she had the nerve. I picked out her ring. I sent it to her fiance. And she had the unmitigated gall that after all of that, she ran out of money for her wedding. I paid for her fiance's fucking wedding band. She ran out of money. She had the unmitigated gall to say to me, well, you weren't there for me when he proposed. So I just have to wonder, how supportive are you? Bitch, I picked out the fucking ring. What do you mean? He didn't call me and say, hey, Aaron, I'm planning a proposal. There wasn't social media like that back then. There was no Instagram to have this big to do and these stories to post. He did that shit. You went up to his job and he gave you a ring and said, so you want to get married or what? Bitch, I had a date. You getting engaged. I'm trying to get there. Let me go into my relationship. I didn't even know that this shit was happening until you called me and said he did it. But I'm not there for you? Like, come on. So it's just, when people are so used to you filling roles for them and they don't want to accept the fact that this should be a two-way friendship, they only want to support you or be there for you the way they want to be, yeah, it can cause the demise. Absolutely. Just like in any other relationship, if you don't feel heard, if you don't feel appreciated, if you don't feel balanced, and who's going to say that to your best friend? Okay, we need to talk. I don't feel heard right now. Like, you don't have those conversations, it turns into arguments, or it turns into falling out, or it turns into a bunch of bitches, and in some cases, it turns into fights, or she fucked my man. Like, you know, it turns into really toxic displays of emotions where a conversation would have suited it perfectly fine, but it doesn't happen.
Because we stop caring, because you start checking out and you don't want to put in that effort anymore. And you also have to remember, like, just like in romantic relationships, friends have love languages. It's absolutely important to know, like, how to be a friend to your friend. I think as grown-ups, it's not enough to just think that you get to have a cookie-cutter friendship approach. Like, you get to be you. But you also have to understand that if you are going to have deeply intimate interpersonal relationships with other adults, or other people, but for sure other adults, you got to meet them and see them where they are in their journey.
Respect their space.
Yep. And respect their space. My friend Nina said, friends let friends go through their phases. And that means if you, in this phase of your life, require X, you get to have X. If I don't have X to give to you, I don't get to talk shit about you to other people because you're going through that phase and I'm not in that phase with you.
But have you ever noticed when it's more one-sided or when the person is more self-serving, they personalize it? So whatever you're going through becomes about them.
Yep.
It becomes about, why isn't she talking to me? I don't care that it's quarantine and we're going through a pandemic, and maybe she's not dealing with isolation well, and so she's shut down. It becomes, oh bitch, you don't want to talk to me, you ain't got shit else to do, you sitting in the house with the COVID, you sitting in the house, you know, self-isolating, you know, sheltering in place, you ain't got time to talk to me. Like, that is very incredibly self-centered, because maybe what I'm going through has nothing to do with you. And maybe just checking on me and saying, hey, are you good? I can understand if you get pissed if I don't respond right away. But a hey, how are you? Are you good? Or hey, how are you? Can go a long way with a person who is used to being there for everyone.
Yeah, especially with social media. It's like a blessing and a curse. Like that little meme that was going around talking about, you tell who your real friends are by seeing who check on you. Like, no, no. No, because in friendships and in every ship, but especially in friendships, all the ships has to be extended. Like, the grace to your friends has to be extended. And if you find yourself still partnered or coupled with people who no longer respect what you need from this friendship, you have every right to opt out. It don't have to be no ugly fight. It don't have to be no ghosting situation. But there are ways to thank and release.
Honestly.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't. It does not have to be an explanation. It can be whatever you want it to be. It does not have to be bad.
And I think that's where Molly and Issa, I guess maybe in talking this out and us kind of processing it, maybe that was the goal of the writers, to bring it full circle with their relationships ending or them going through all this stuff and realizing that at the root of it, they still value needing each other in those most intimate moments. If they could establish or understand that we're here for each other regardless, but real life happens, and sometimes there's a shift where I may not be able to be there for you as much recreationally, but I'm always here for you emotionally, or whatever their dynamics are. If they can have a real adult conversation about that and work on those boundaries, then maybe there is a chance that their friendship can bounce back. But the reality of that happening, to this day, that bitch still ain't paid me back for the money that I spent.
And to this day, the people that don't want to be my friends still ain't my friends. So
I told my other friend, bitch, you owe me $3,500. You got married on a destination wedding. Y'all didn't even stay married a full year. I want my money back.
Hell yeah, run that.
So yeah, but maybe they'll do better. Maybe the script writers will do better and do better by Black female friendship dynamics. So I don't know.
I appreciate Kelly though, because she's the superstar of the friendship group. And if your friendship group has a Kelly, somebody who
that one person that holds it, tries to hold it all together and make people level-headed and make people talk, because they don't want to see, you know, y'all break up anyway, because who gets custody? Who gets custody of Kim?
Who gets that? When friendships break up, who gets custody? That's real shit. I left some groupies. Because I was like, you know, this is not, I'm not even going to play this. You know, I might laugh and joke, but I don't play. See, that's why people don't recognize that I'm sensitive on the inside, because I don't be for no bullshit, no fuck shit. Like, I will leave before I sit here and be in a space that is unhealthy and toxic for me. So who gets custody during a friendship breakup?
Well, my friend who got to everybody before me, she got custody of all of them. I walked away willingly, because my thing was this. How many of you called me and said, not to be messy, but just to be like, hey, what's going on? Because this is what I'm hearing. No, you all wanted me to defend myself. So just like she came to you, you wanted me to approach you with the bullshit and tell you everything that was going on and tell my side. I was so exhausted, because it felt like this was a slow burn for at least over a year. So I was so exhausted. That's where either you with me or against me came in. I changed hairdressers because we went to the same hairdresser. I stopped going to social events because I didn't want. And so I had someone say to me, but it seems like, you know, it seems like she was right in everything she said because you just disappeared. And I said, no, I had to really understand that these people that were entertaining her, those people were not my people. And so I removed myself from the situation. There is a difference. Now, if someone had called me and checked on me, maybe I would have been more inclined to process with them or try to figure it out. But no, I want no parts of it. None. And maybe that's wrong. Maybe I did, you know, flee. But I checked out completely.
No, I will always vote for protecting your peace and surrounding yourself with people who pour into you and see your light, and following up and chasing after people who are not aligned with who you are at this phase anyway. Like you said, it was like you was looking for a reason and you just wanted to blame the lake. I don't hate the lake, but you can go around and tell everybody, like, I'm not going to argue with you, and I'm not about to try to create this counter narrative for a fictionalized account that you created. Girl, that's your story. That's your story. I hope it's good.
And you can have it, because I don't want no parts. I'm a firm believer that most of the problems that we experience as we try to navigate this world, especially socially, those problems stem from relationships, whether it be a relationship that you have with other people and your roles and how you adapt and ascribe to those roles, or the relationship that you have with yourself. And when there when you do experience very devastating events like breakups, whether it be friendship, romantic, whatever, that is the opportunity for you to revisit and redefine and reshape your relationship with yourself. You can reflect, you can grow, you can determine what you will accept, what you won't accept, you can establish boundaries, but you can heal. And that's the biggest piece of it. In any relationship that ends, you need that time period to be able to heal from that loss, because it's still a loss. You're still going to grieve, whether you want to accept it or not. But you can still come out of it stronger, better, have a clearer understanding, whatever it is that you need to work on making you a better version of yourself due to this loss. So, but and people don't do that either. So
it's very hard.
It's very hard. It took me years to be able to even talk about this friendship without feeling emotional, because it was business dealings. Like, I really thought this was my family. I was closer to her than I was to my blood relatives. So it felt like a stab in the front and a double stab in the back.
Whoo-wee.
But such is life. I'm much better. I'm like, you know, the best version of myself now. And that was, at this point, it's been about 10 years. But you see, it stuck with me.
And it does. Those experiences shape who we are and shape and influence how we experience relationships. But I think you said it perfectly, taking that time from that loss and that grief and this transition from, you know, one stage to the next, to understand who you are, understand the role that you did play, because it's not necessarily about right or wrong. And right. I think a lot of times in these adult relationships, we get caught up on that. And I know I like to be like, but was it wrong? But there is nuance. And ultimately, there was this post I shared on Facebook from my friend Connie. And she said, it's impossible to be at peace with someone who isn't at peace with themselves. Right. So you can try to make up. You can try to apologize. You can try to fix. You can try to listen. But if a person is upset, and for whatever reason, you are triggering whatever makes them upset, there's nothing you can do. And you have every right. If somebody, even if they create this narrative and picture of you, you know who you are. So you ain't even got to keep fighting that battle, because it's unlikely that you will change their mind anyway. But that's why you have to follow your light to your friends and the people that charge you up, your homies who come in and ebbs and flows, but reasons, seasons, and lifetimes. You one of my lifetime friends.
Oh, I feel so special.
Even though you got me fired on my day off.
I definitely didn't, but that's your version of the story. And
see what I'm saying? My version. We got facts. We got paperwork that say dismissed, baby, on my day off.
Well, you know, that had everything to do with the moron that you were working for. Less about me. So, you know, but you see how we were able to talk that through and process that, you know, there's accountability measures in place. So, yeah, I mean, people, if they're going to be there, if they're meant to be there, it will, I don't want to say it will work itself out, but it's a difference with you having to work too hard at something and you being willing to do the work to maintain something.
Absolutely.
That's totally different. So the same thing applies to these friendships, and I'm cool with that.
I'm cool with it too. Thank you for coming to the show and talking with me about everything that has changed from January to June 2020. Boy, we are living in some perilous times.
We got 6 more months. Let's just hope that it, man, in like a lion, out like a lamb. I really hope.
We'll see. We'll check back in with you in the fall. We'll be able to wrap this 2020
yes,
up.
By then, we'll see if the Secretary of State is open. And if I'm no longer the anti-bride and, you know, I am the pro-wife, maybe.
Let's see this evolution. All right. I love you so much, dear friend. Thank you for coming on the show.
I love you, Danielle. Thank you for having me, Rose Garden.
Yay. All right, guys. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right, superstars. We are all out of time. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you love the show, make sure to subscribe, share, review the episodes, tag a friend, talk to me. Visit DanielleMoneyham.com and follow me on social media to stay connected. Your support means the world to me. So thank you for helping my dreams come true. A major lesson that I learned, that I continue to learn, is that although you will experience dark moments in your journey, you can be the light. You have more power than you know. Until we meet again, shine bright.